We'll hear argument first this morning in number 98-131, United States versus Sun Diamond Growers of California. Mr. Ray.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, respondent Sun Diamond Growers was extensively regulated by the United States Department of Agriculture. In the first 14 months of Secretary of Agriculture Mike Espy's tenure, Sun Diamond lavished on its chief regulator thousands of dollars in gifts while it had millions of dollars at stake in USDA programs. The jury convicted respondent of giving unlawful gratuities under Section 201C by finding that Sun Diamond gave the gratuities for because of the Secretary's official position. Under the plain language of the statute, an official act, Section 201A3, means any decision or action on any matter which may be pending before the public official in his official capacity. Here, the statute reaches $6,000 in gifts given by a regulated entity for because of the official's position, his capacity to act on matters pending or on matters which could be brought before USDA.
Counsel, I thought that the section we're looking at, C1A, says that it covers the situation where the defendant directly or indirectly gives anything of value to a public official for or because of any official act performed or to be performed by that official.
Justice Carter,
there is a link there between an act performed or to be performed. It isn't baking brownies for the senator or knitting a pair of socks for some public official, is it?
Justice O'Connor, you are correct. The element is for or because of an official act. That element was provided by the district judge to the jury in this case. The issue, however, is whether or not the district judge's explanation of what would be sufficient proof of the requisite motivation was satisfied by a jury finding that the motivation behind the gift was for or because of the official's position. In this case, involving a regulated entity, our position is that the position of the official is coextensive with his capacity to act on any number of acts coming before him.
Oh, but that's quite different from linking it to an act performed or to be performed. And you want to say that anything given because the official is enough.
Only, Your Honor, and that was why we answered the question presented by the court in a qualified way, only when it is the official's position understood as the capacity to act do we believe that there is an equivalence, that they are coextensive with one another.
But isn't the difficulty, or one of the difficulties for your position, at least with respect to these instructions, that the judge in giving the instructions went so far as to say that there need be no link with any act at all? And at that point, even assuming there's some merit to your argument, it seems to me at that point the judge just totally untethered the position from the capacity to act or the anticipation of action. And even if we were to accept your position, wouldn't we have to find error in that instruction?
No, Justice Souter, for the following reason. The link that Your Honor is referring to is a link that came during the portion of the instruction where the judge was making clear to the jury that this was not a bribery offense. The link being...
Well, he sure did that, but he went a lot further than that, didn't he? I mean, the bribery offense, as we've described it, requires a fairly specific quid pro quo kind of link, specific act, specific gift. This went far beyond anything that would be appropriate to distinguish this from the bribery statute.
Your Honor, but it was in the portion of the charge where the judge was trying to explain to the jury that no such link was required. That is, that the jury did not have to find that there was a particular official act or a matter in mind.
But that isn't what he said. He said it doesn't have to be linked to any act.
Your Honor, our position is that if it is the prospect of official conduct that motivates the gift, it's enough to find that to satisfy this offense. To hold otherwise, that is to distinguish between gifts given for official acts in general.
I know that's your position, but why does it make sense? That is to say, why should we read a criminal statute to suddenly make a group of old age home residents decide to send a little present because they think the senator has been generally in favor of old age homes? Why should you have such an expansive reading of a criminal statute when there are a large number of ethics rules and other non-criminal matters that adequately, at least arguably, control conduct like this when it is unethical? Why should we give prosecutors such broad discretion to prosecute people who have done things that are not even immoral? That's the general kind of question that I'd like you to address.
Let me answer the why question first. The why question is that it shouldn't be any less offensive to integrity in government that gratuities were given with a particular matter in mind, a whole multitude of matters in mind, or no specific or any official act in mind at the time of the gift, as long as there is sufficient proof of motivation of the prospect of official action, in other words, the prospect of official conduct. To answer your hypothetical, in that hypothetical circumstance, it is our position that our logic, the logic to the fore because of official position argument, would be sufficient to encompass your hypothetical if the motivation behind that gift was the senior citizen offering a gift to a public official in that circumstance because of the official's position or indeed because of official action with respect to legislation that was of interest to that senior citizen.
Mr. Ray, my problem is just the opposite of Justice Breyer's. I don't find it at all amazing that Congress should seek to write a statute of the sort that you say this is. And the reason I don't find it amazing is that they already have, but in a different section of the United States Code. And the problem is that we normally interpret a statute in such fashion as not to duplicate something else that is already on the books. How does this statute, as you interpret it, differ from 5 U.S.C. Section 7353, which prohibits federal employees from accepting anything of value from persons, quote, whose interests may be substantially affected by the performance or non-performance of the individual's official duties? That sounds like your very argument here.
It is not, Justice Scalia, because
what's the difference between those two, then?
The difference under 7353A is that the statute is simply asking there, as a fact, whether or not those interests were ones before the public official. It is not asking what the motivation was behind the gift. Our position absolutely.
Well, this one is included within the other one, you mean. The other one requires even less.
No, Your Honor. The federal gratuity statute requires proof of intent, criminal intent, a motivation, the motivation for because of official position or for because of official acts, the prospect of official conduct. 7353A, first of all, only applies
to the employee.
To the employee. So it would not encompass Sun Diamond's conduct in this case, clearly. But even apart from that, it doesn't require any proof of intent. It simply says, if you shall solicit or accept anything of value from a person whose interests may be substantially affected, that is what is encompassed by that provision.
Well, but it still duplicates the other. I mean, the one is a lesser included of the other, it seems to me. The one statute says if you accept it from someone who can be affected by your decisions, knowing that he is giving it to you because he is affected by your decisions, you're guilty. That's your statute. This statute says if you accept it from somebody who may be substantially affected by your decisions, even if he doesn't know that he may be substantially affected by your decisions, you're guilty.
Your Honor,
it doesn't make sense to have two statutes overlapping like that.
Your Honor, we believe it does make some sense. First of all, there is necessarily some overlap from what 7353 invites, which is the passage of regulations that deal in an administrative matter with conduct of federal employees. And clearly, there may be circumstances where the conduct of a federal employee would violate a regulation leading to dismissal or other sanction, and also might also, under the same conduct, include criminal prosecution.
This is not a regulation. I can understand how a regulation may go further than a statute and render any violation of the regulation automatically a violation of the statute. But this is another statute, and it since there is another way to read the statute that you're prosecuting under here, I'm inclined to read it in such fashion that it will do something different insofar as the employee is concerned than 7353 does.
Your Honor, this statute, 5 U.S.C. 7353, first of all, does not do anything other than authorize the enactment or passage of federal regulations to deal with its general conduct. But again, to return to the answer to your question, why this is different than Section 201, it is significantly different because there is no criminal intent, there's no knowledge requirement in this proscription, 7353, which is, we believe, is the substantial difference between what Congress had in mind in 1962 when it passed 18 U.S.C. Section 201C, which covers the situation of a gratuities offense.
Well, the other statute doesn't purport to deal with donors, does it?
It does not, Your Honor. It is limited by its express terms to gifts to federal employees, covering only federal employees.
But the point still remains that if there's more than one plausible reading of the statute, why should we adopt that reading that creates such a large gap between the law and everyday practice?
Your Honor, Justice Kennedy,
The cookie hypothetical and any number of such ones, unless we're just going to rely on prosecutorial discretion.
Your Honor, the only safe harbor that is apparent with respect to prosecution under the federal gratuity statute under our theory, again, is this question of whether or not there's a gift given to a public official solely because of that public official status, completely untethered from official acts. In other words, the Department of Justice's hypothetical, which deals with the general question of a status gift unconnected to the capacity for official action.
That's exactly
that's
the problem.
Different.
My position was, when I asked you the question, it was the same, I think, as Justice Scalia's. 5 U.S.C. 7353 is not a criminal statute, is it?
Correct, Your Honor.
All right. So this kind of area, I gather from what you prosecute, sometimes every public official is sometimes invited to go on a trip to speak to people. They might give him dinner. They might, and evidently some of those things are sometimes actually prosecuted. Well, why not, given the difficulties in this area, assume that Congress intended this general kind of present giving, i.e., we invite you on a trip to speak to a trade association, or give that kind of thing should be handled by civil regulations, rather than somebody bringing the blunderbuss of the criminal law into the prosecutor's arsenal, where they could prosecute trivial things.
Justice Breyer, but that's not what Congress intended, and it became apparent in 1989. With the passage of 5 U.S.C. 7353. At the time that Congress passed this statute, it recognized the Department of Justice's broad sweep and interpretation to the 201 gratuity statute consistent with the intent of Congress going back to the beginning, which was when it was passed in 1962. It recognized that there was, in fact, overlap between the scheme that it was going to further post-1989 in connection with federal regulations that would be applicable to all federal employees. It recognized further that the intent sufficient to satisfy a 201C offense was motivated for or because of an official's position. That was
but
the sweep.
Congress didn't say position, and that's the problem. You were about to give us a safe harbor, but the charge to the jury was that the gratuity statute makes it a crime to give a public official a thing of value because of his official position. Now, whether or not the giver or receiver intended that particular official's acts to be influenced. So that seems to say it's because of the official position, whether or not there was any intent that the official's acts, very broadly, not particular acts, but the particular official's acts be influenced. First, I had a question of how this charge came to be. Was this a result of a request to charge by the prosecution?
Justice Ginsburg, it was, but it included as part of that charge both requests by the government as well as requests by the defendant.
But this particular charge was proposed by?
Correct, Your Honor. The part that you just read, yes.
By whom?
By the government. And with respect to that portion of the charge, the reason the government included it, Your Honor, is because intent to influence is not an element of a bribery, of a gratuity offense. It is, by contrast, an element of a bribery offense, which is Section 201B. We believe that.
But you made it, you could have done the same thing using the words of the act instead of inserting the word position.
That's correct. We could have done that, and district court certainly could have instructed in that fashion. We're here simply to say, Your Honor, that an additional requirement which, if you instruct in a fashion such as official acts, begs the question about whether or not you're requiring, for example, a specific official act to be shown. We believe no such requirement exists in the federal gratuity statute.
But it may be that no specific act is required, but it still would, this language would suggest that perhaps a somewhat more amorphous future possible acts on the part of the official.
You are correct, Mr. Chief Justice. That's right, and it could have been, the government could have talked in terms, and the district judge could have talked in terms of acts rather than position.
But there is a difference, don't you think? I mean, one could give a gratuity to somebody because he just likes, who had no connection with agriculture at all, just because he likes to sit next to the secretary at a football game or something like that. And I don't think that would come within the language of the statute. And yet that's given to him because of his official position.
You are correct, Your Honor. It is not within the language of the statute. It is not our position or the Department of Justice's position that that would be included under our theory of the case under 4 because of official position. That, however, was not presented by the facts of this case. And it was not left to the jury to simply speculate about what type of official action they were to be concerned about. In this case, the judge further instructed the jury that the jury had to find official acts. The portion of the charge, which is in the appendix at page 88, said, with respect to official acts, I'm reading from the second full paragraph, the government has to prove that Sun Diamond Growers gave knowingly and willingly Secretary Espy things of value while it had issues before the United States Department of Agriculture. Our position is that ultimately what the gratuity statute is about is the prospect of official action. In Justice Ginsburg's hypothetical, ultimately the prospect of intending to have some influence on official action. The issue in this case is what is the element of the offense that Congress required.
Well, but I think you've
at least confusing if the jury just isolated this sentence, thing of value because of official position, whether or not there was an intent to influence acts. If you just took that out, I mean, it just says official position.
And our difficulty with that, Your Honor, to answer your question, is that the element of the offense, intent to influence, is a bribery concept. Much of what a district judge does, and this has been proven by experience since the statute's been enacted in 1962, is a large effort to make sure that the jury understands the difference between a bribery offense and a gratuities offense. A bribery offense has essentially three important components different than a gratuity offense. One of them is an intent to influence. Another is corrupt intent. The third is a quid pro quo or an agreement.
Well, may I ask you about the distinction that you're drawing on intent to influence? Because the plausibility of that distinction, it seems to me, given the text of 201, will vary greatly depending on whether we use the word acts as our focus or position as our focus. What I'm getting at is the phrase, for or because of. If we say that a gift violates the statute, if it's given for or because of the position, then I think it follows quite readily from what, as you have been saying, that the notion of intent to influence is outside this statute. It's not the focus of the statute.
Yes, Your Honor.
But if we go back to the original language and we speak of for or because of acts, then it becomes quite implausible in a way, I suppose, suggested by Judge Wall's remark, to think of a gift that might plausibly be given for or because of acts which wasn't intended to influence the way those acts were performed. Would you comment on that? So I guess my point is, if we accept the equation of position and acts, then the notion of intending to influence really does seem to drop out. But if we stick to the text and we say for or because of acts, then the notion of intending to influence, it seems to me, is rather hard to get out of the statute.
We believe Judge Wald correctly recognized the point that inherent in a gift given in a regulated context is ultimately the prospect of official action. And to start to talk about intent to influence as a required element of the offense, we believe leads the jury astray.
Would you request, would it be appropriate for a judge to say in charging under this statute whether or not there was any even general intent on the part of the donor to influence the official in the manner in which the official performed his acts is totally irrelevant. Would that be a correct instruction?
I would think that would be as misleading as instructing with intent to influence. We have to be careful about, obviously, how to instruct.
Well, let's just talk as lawyers now for a minute. As a technical statement of law, would that instruction have been right or wrong on your view?
With respect to a sort of a generalized intent?
That's right.
I think wherever you talk about a generalized intent to influence, seems to me to be no different than saying you're going to require some sort of a specific intent to influence.
Was the instruction right or wrong?
We believe that the instruction read as a whole in its
entirety. I'm talking about my hypothetical instruction.
Oh, your hypothetical.
Would that have been right or wrong?
In isolation, I think in isolation it's not wrong. We think it would require some further explanation to be clear about what is meant. I mean, certainly you can envision other ways to explain this.
It doesn't seem to me that the choice is between reading this statute as one that requires an intent to influence and reading it as one that requires merely giving a gift because of the person's office. It seems to me this statute covers a situation in which you reward someone for an act already performed.
That's half of it, Your Honor.
Well, I think that's a part of it that doesn't trouble me, but it's a good deal short of saying that any gift because of a person's office comes within the statute. I mean, let's assume that the person has come out with a ruling that greatly favors a particular company, and then the company gives him $10,000. Now, you couldn't get that under the bribery statute because the decision was already made.
That's correct, Justice Scalia.
But
that
you could get it under this statute, right?
That's correct. And the reason...
Well, why isn't that enough? Why do we have to go further and say whenever you give a gift to a public official, you're covered?
That's only half of the statute. The statute also deals with prospective activity to be performed. Your hypothetical deals simply with the first half, which is what has already been performed, the reward for past official action.
Mm-hmm. Well, suppose the official has announced that he will perform an act. And he then, but he hasn't performed it yet, he then gets the gratuity or the reward Justice Scalia describes.
Justice Kennedy,
I think that would be covered by the statute, and that also explains the to be performed language.
Well, it does, Your Honor, and our position is that's three quarters of the way.
But if the official has under advisement a proposed regulation, I think your view is it would be covered
Yes. Because
it's an act to be performed.
That's correct, and that would get us even further the way there, but not all of the way there.
Well, where are we lacking?
Where we're lacking, we'll get there eventually.
Okay.
Mr. Chief Justice, where we're lacking is, again, the prospect of future conduct, where it is not speculative that there's a likelihood that it will be there. Clearly presented by the facts of this case, absolutely no question in a regulated context where Sundiamond is a large agricultural cooperative regulated on a day-to-day basis by the Secretary of Agriculture in a situation where the jury is also required to find that there were matters pending before the Department of Agriculture of interest to Sundiamond, that it is sufficient under the statute to embrace and encompass within its scope the prospect of official action
by
that official.
Well, Mr. Ray, it could well be that the evidence in this case could support a conviction by a properly instructed jury. And I think the question is whether the jury is properly instructed here. Let me ask you this. You have filed this petition on behalf of the Independent Counsel.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And the Solicitor General has filed a separate brief on behalf, I guess, of the Department of Justice.
Yes.
How does the Solicitor General's position differ from yours, would you say?
We believe that the positions are the same. Both deal with the question of whether or not for or because of official position is sufficient to satisfy the statute. The Department of Justice explains that that's an appropriate shorthand, a shorthand used by the Fifth Circuit in Evans and Bustamante and by the Third Circuit in Standifer for a showing for because of official acts, so long as official position is understood to mean the prospect of official action, the capacity to act, consistent with the definition under 201A3. As long as it is properly understood, our position and the Department of Justice's position is the same. We don't believe there's any discrepancy. Your Honor's question goes toward ultimately whether or not this was a properly instructed jury. We believe that it was. If there was any error in the instruction, we believe that it was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt and that the jury's verdict should be reinstated. That's our position. Also,
I really didn't read the Solicitor General's brief as being identical to yours. You really think it's the exact same position you maintain?
Ultimately, we believe the positions are the same. Yes, Your Honor. It is the capacity to act.
So we can rely entirely on his brief and you'll be satisfied?
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Well, why not? Why not?
Obviously, we have an interest in defending the instruction that was given by the district court in this case. That is not a position that the Solicitor General rendered any opinion on for obvious reasons. I mean, every lawsuit is a dispute between the parties. We believe in this lawsuit.
What are the obvious reasons? They're not obvious to me.
I'm sorry?
What are the obvious reasons?
Well, we have an interest in defending the instruction and the jury's verdict. The Department of Justice's position in this case as an amicus is in making sure there's a proper understanding and interpretation of the language of the federal gratuity statute. So in that sense, they are different.
How does it work, in your opinion? Suppose a group of farmers ask Secretary of Agriculture to come and talk to us. They say, we'd like you to tell us about the department's policies that affect us. Here's the ticket, or we'll buy you lunch. It's a banquet. Bring your wife to the banquet. In your view, is that a federal crime?
We don't believe
there. Why not?
We don't believe there's a sufficient showing of motivation based on.
No, what they want is they definitely want him to come out. Indeed, what they want him to do is talk about price supports. They're in favor of price supports. They want him to talk at lunch.
If it's completely untethered to the prospect of official action, that would not be a sufficient.
What do you mean
showing?
Untethered? They want him to talk about official action. They want him to talk about his policies as Secretary of Agriculture. I give you the example, and I want to know, in your opinion, how does this statute apply?
On those facts, as you just added them, that would appear to suggest a motivation involving some capacity to act.
It's a federal crime, in your opinion.
There would have to be additional facts that were not present in your hypothetical that were present here. Did they have any matters before that official?
Yes, of course farmers do. They all do. That's what the Secretary of Agriculture does. He decides things that affect farmers.
And under those circumstances, if that motivation were shown that it was for because of that position, we believe that would be within the four corners of this statute, yes.
And therefore, if farmers who ask the Secretary to speak, to come to lunch, to talk about his policies, are all committing federal crimes, I would have thought that was fairly common. I may not understand.
Well, unless, remember that there were also defenses presented in this case. In this particular case, as in your case, potentially, the defense of friendship might apply, social purpose, or other innocent reason.
It's business.
And that, if those defenses were shown, then that would be sufficient, if that was the motivation for the gift, to defeat liability.
Do you think any public officials in Washington will be surprised by your interpretation?
Well, public officials.
I'm serious about that. There's a huge gap between the general understanding and your interpretation. And if the statute is open to two plausible interpretations, it seems to me that we shouldn't adopt yours for that reason.
Your Honor, we don't think so because already there's a scheme in place under the federal regulations that deal with precisely the issue that you describe. Public officials are already on notice about.
They don't go. I would have thought it was good for secretaries of agriculture to explain to farmers what their policies will be in the future. I mean, is it now the general understanding that they don't?
Your Honor, I see that my time has expired. May I?
But you may answer the question.
We're not saying that we're trying to bar access. There's no question that farmers have a right to appear before these individuals, these officials, and advance their position. The question is buying access. I mean, the official can appear as long as the official pays his own way. The problem is when the official is in a relationship with someone who prospectively has action before them and takes these gifts and takes them on the nickel of the person who has an interest.
I think you've answered the question, Mr.
Thank you,
Ray.
Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll hear from you, Mr. Bloom.
Thank you, Your Honor. the Department of Justice?
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. I'd like to turn immediately to a couple of issues raised in the questioning of the appellant. Justice Ginsburg, you asked the question, how did these instructions come to be? And I think it's very important to go through the procedural posture. In this case, Sundiamond filed a motion to dismiss the indictment. The government opposed that motion and in very explicit terms said that courts have made clear that for a gratuity to be established, it is not necessary to allege a direct nexus between the value conferred and an official act by the public official. That's page 5 in the government's opposition. Indeed, after
the opposition in the district court?
Yes.
Do you contend that was erroneous?
I'm sorry?
Do you contend that that statement was erroneous about the direct nexus?
Yes, Your Honor, we do.
That's way, way back in time and in the proceedings. Something the government said in opposition to a motion dismissed in the district. How does that bear on what we have here? The government may have changed its position.
I understand, and I literally want to walk you through because the next step was...
You've got half an hour.
I understand. I walk very quickly. Then we go to trial, and at trial, in opening statement, the independent counsel, and I refer to the independent counsel, I mean the Office of Independent Counsel, told the jury, quote, what this is and what the law prohibits is giving a thing of value to a public official because the person is a public official when there's some business that you have before the public official. That's pages 3 and 4 of the transcript. Then, at a sidebar, the independent counsel reaffirmed this view.
It's the United States that's the petitioner here.
I'm sorry, after 4 years. The United States. The prosecutor then reaffirmed this view to the court and said, essentially, the court did not require the showing of a nexus between the thing of value and the particular acts the secretary may have taken. It is not necessary under the law. And that's page 734 of the transcript. This case was being tried under the for or because of an official position standard. So when the parties filed our respective proposed jury instructions, it is not surprising that the jury instructions did not come close to one another. With respect to the jury instructions themselves, we believe that effectively it stripped the fact finder of finding the one question, the central question in this case. Specifically, whether, in fact, Sundiamond's gifts were for or because of any official act. Now, as I understand Mr. Ray...
Do you say it has to be because of some particular official act?
Ultimately, that's not Sundiamond's battle, but we do believe that the statute calls for a link between a gift on one hand and some specific or identifiable
official
act.
Specific or identifiable. Well, I mean, let's say I'm AT&T. And I just give enormous quantities of money to the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission.
Well,
doesn't violate this act.
Well, two answers.
Saying, you know, I'm not asking you to do anything in particular. I have no particular case in mind.
Two answers.
Just want you to be a friend, that's all.
I strongly suspect that if I have matters before the FEC or before any department, it's not going to be terribly difficult for the prosecutor, especially with the resources of the grand jury, to be able to identify matters. The second part...
No, wait, you have to take my hypothetical. There is no particular matter that AT&T mentioned to the chairman. Just said, you know, I just love chairmen of the FCC. They are wonderful people. They're, you know, they could make a lot more money elsewhere. This is in appreciation of your taking all this time out to serve the people. And I, you know, here's a couple of $1 million.
Well, I strongly suspect that a jury could find that it was for an act if one were identified, but using your hypothetical...
No particular act.
I understand. So using your hypothetical, I would suspect that that person could be charged under one of the other statutes, salary supplementation statute. It sounds like he's giving the money because of the job and because of his acts as a pursuant...
My question was not whether he could be charged on one of the other statutes. It's whether he could be charged under this statute.
Right, and our answer is no.
Is no.
Is no.
And on your view, tell me what the distinction is between the requirement of the specificity requirement of this statute and the specificity requirement of the bribery statute.
Under bribery, you need a quid pro quo. There are clearly strings attached.
Well, the quid pro quo is the agreement that connects the thing given with a specific act.
Right, I understand.
The act doesn't have to be completed to violate the bribery statute.
Right.
We agree on that. So there's a specific gift, specific act. Now, you've been talking about, I think, about specific acts under the gratuity statute. So how do we distinguish between the two?
Let us hypothesize that I'm giving a lot of gifts, not in exchange for, not with any implicit or explicit agreement that the government official is going to do me a favor in return. There are no strings attached. I'm plying this guy with gifts, hoping that it may influence him, hoping that when a time comes that he's going to rule on MPP or methyl bromide, that he's going to think twice about me.
Well, then there is no – then maybe I misunderstood your position. There is no specificity requirement under the specificity as to the act requirement under the gratuity statute on your view. Is that correct?
No. Our view is that the prosecutor has to identify one or more acts for which the gifts are given.
Okay, we're back to the specific. What's the difference between the one or more acts that he's got to identify for the gratuity statute and the identification of one or more acts under the bribery statute?
Under the bribery statute, there's a quid pro quo.
Well, the quid pro quo, correct me here, I thought quid pro quo meant that there was an agreement that the gift would be in exchange for action in this particular instance.
That is correct.
All right. And I think what you're saying is, if you have to, the only difference then is you don't get too explicit about the agreement under the gratuity statute.
There is no agreement.
You got a particular gift, and you've got a specific act in mind, and the prosecutor has got to show it and prove it. But we just don't get down to so many words in identifying, when we're giving the gift, we don't get down to so many words in identifying the connection between this gift and this act. That's the difference?
Right. Essentially, there is no agreement in the case of a gratuity. The typical or classical or traditional gratuity is the reward, a reward for an act taken or one where the government official has committed himself
okay.
to performing that
but,
act.
But the distinction is simply one of explicitness, of a lack of articulation of the connection. Is that your position?
Well, not even articulation. There is no agreement.
Then why does the prosecutor have to prove specific acts?
Because we believe that the statute almost cries out for it. The words of the statute.
You're asking, if you're arguing this, then you're going beyond where the Court of Appeals went, because the Court of Appeals didn't say it had to be this act or that act. It didn't the Court of Appeals contemplate a multitude of acts that might be in the agency's bailiwick?
In the appendix, the Court of Appeals decision is attached and at page 8. And whatever degree of intent to influence may be necessary for a bribe, a gift looking to future acts can be an unlawful gratuity where the giver is motivated simply by the desire to increase the likelihood of one or more specific favorable acts.
You say that's wrong.
No, we say that's correct.
Why is it? I am confused by the two. I thought the classical bribe is I want the public official to do something for me. And moreover, I go to him and say, I'll pay you $1,000 if you do X. And it's a fairly specific thing. I thought the classical gratuity is what it says. It's a tip. The person did it anyway. I say, thank you. Thank you for giving me 48 million acres. Thank you. And here's your tip, $1,000. Now, normally that would be in the past. He would have done it. But sometimes I guess it could be in the future. He just doesn't know I want him to do it. But he does it.
Well,
independently, and I give him a tip. And I give him a tip for what I mean, I don't understand how the future works, but if that's the distinction, you don't need any agreement whatsoever in the gratuity case. None. Nor does it matter that you're trying to influence him. It couldn't matter less that you're trying to influence him. Influence has nothing to do with it. Now, am I right? I'm not at all sure I'm right.
No. You are absolutely perfectly correct. As a matter of fact, what you articulated is very recently what the Fourth Circuit adopted in United States v. Jennings. And perhaps it's best to kind of set up a hierarchy of conduct. Clearly, the top tier would be bribery. And there you have a quid pro quo. This for that. There are strings attached. There is a tier, gratuities, clearly covering, and I believe what Congress
in the legislative history suggests it was intending to cover, mm-hmm. were rewards, a tip, a thank you. The question is whether a gratuity can also cover instances with respect to influence. And I kind of like the Court of Appeals.
How about the to be performed part of the statute?
Well, what the courts have done that interpret the gratuity statute as merely a reward. In fact, there was an Eighth Circuit case that affirmed an instruction, and the instruction said this. Find the defendant guilty. If you find that the gift was intended as a reward for any acts the government official committed or committed to perform.
Well, but committed to perform is bribery.
No, because
that's simply reading out the part of the statute that says to be performed.
Well, let me give you the hypothetical. What about a...
Well, don't ask me questions.
Simply, let me give you an example of what it is that I'm talking about, Mr. Chief Justice. And that is, I, as a senator, make out a very public statement. I am going to vote for this piece of legislation. I am committed to performing it. I haven't acted on it yet. In fact, that legislation may not even be pending. I'm thrilled that he's taking this stance. It is an act to be performed. I give him the reward.
But then the difficult why this case isn't so totally obvious is because take a gratuity statute. You'd say that okay, I understand perfectly well you're giving a person a tip. That's what you're not supposed to do. Well, you don't give a person a tip for being who he is. That's clear, I don't think. That's not a tip to get for. So being in a position, you know, that's not in the statute. But it isn't so clear that it has to be an absolutely precise act. You could be giving a person a tip because of a whole series of things that he did, or a whole series of things that he now has promised to do. What a good guy he is. He says, I promise to buy this piece of property next year. That's to be performed. You see, that's wonderful. Now, he doesn't say to buy this piece of property. He says to buy some property. Now, he doesn't say to buy some property. He says to take a certain course of action. And then it becomes vaguer and vaguer. And that doesn't necessarily stop it from being a tip. And that's why I think this case isn't obvious one way or the other.
And certainly it's a legitimate question, yes. Whether or not...
What's your response?
That's exactly right. And one of the things that we try to grapple with is...
Yeah, but you've got to argue that this general course of conduct is not something that falls within the statute. Rather, you want it to be more specific act.
Well, we believe that the statute does call for that. That's right. And one of the questions here, I think is a difficult...
But Judge Williams didn't say that. Indeed, I think he rejected your position. You called our attention to page 8 in the appendix. If you look at page 13 and 14... where Judge Williams said, at the same time, we reject Sun Diamond's broad attack on the indictment.
Where are you reading from?
Appendix page 13, the paragraph at the end of the page, where the D.C. Circuit said that it isn't necessary to tie the particular free service provided to particular tickets or tickets. Leniency in a multitude of specific acts was enough, that an official has an abundance of relevant matters on his plate should not insulate him from the gratuity statute.
And ironically, we actually agree with this. It's still a multitude of specific acts. You can tell us what the group of specific acts are.
This is hypothetical. The new chairman of the FCC in 18 comes in and says, you're going to have a multitude of acts in your office. And, you know, no specific one, but here's $2 million. Think well of us in all of these, in everything you do in this office. Okay. Is that a violation?
Well, I think the answer is probably yes, and I think the answer why it's
what
probably
specific
yes.
acts are involved?
Well, I was going to just say, provided the government can identify the myriad of specific acts. In other words, clearly, if I've got 10 matters pending, and I could literally give
all
that
money. It's just everything he does in his office, which is why it's not a very far stretch to say that I'm giving him the money because of his office, because of everything that he does as chairman of the FCC.
What we're trying to protect,
at least everything that affects point-to-point telecommunications.
What we're trying to protect against is a jury just saying, wait a minute. These guys gave money. It must have been to influence. Influence what? The act requires a gift on the one hand, act or acts on the other hand, and some nexus for or because of an official act in the middle. And
to influence in the hypothetical, here's the money. Now, think well of us. I'm giving you some money. Please think well of us. That's bribery, not a gratuity, isn't it?
Well,
If I'm giving you the money because you will think well of us, it's a gratuity.
Well,
if I'm giving you the money in order to, is it bribery? Or maybe I'm not right.
Well, certainly, I think what the jury would infer there is I'm giving the money so that he will act favorably with respect to us, with respect to these 10 matters we have pending.
Well, but you don't think it's a violation of the bribery statute, do you?
If it's a quid pro quo.
I haven't asked for any commitment on his part. You've been telling us that there has to be an agreement.
Right. If there's an implicit agreement, I mean, that's going to be a question of fact for the jury.
How is an implicit agreement when I say here, please think well of us?
If that's all there is, that's all there is.
That was my hypothetical.
Then it may well be a gratuity, and all we would say is in the indictment, identify what those acts are that are pending.
Well, but then also, if he rules against the giver in every case, it would pretty clearly not be a bribery, but it would clearly still be a gratuity if the gift was given in order to motivate him to act favorably.
To make acts more likely.
Yes.
Yes.
Is it possible to interpret the statute so that it has a retroactive reach? There has to be a commitment to take an act, or an act has to be taken.
Well,
you apparently don't take that position.
Well, I was going to say, several courts have. The reason why we haven't is because the words for or because of, we think, are probably broad enough to capture not only a reward, but it probably embraces improper attempts to influence where it does not rise to the level of bribery.
The problem, once you do that and couple the analysis with the possibility of being multiple specific acts, at least more than one, you're very close to official position.
Well, I disagree. Oh, no, I don't disagree, because it's actually close. But it's still a long way from home. In fact, this is really, I think, the key, as I understand it, to the independent counsel's argument. The independent counsel says, in this
case. The government.
The government. Thank you. In this case, Sun Diamond is a regulated entity. Therefore, we don't have to prove it's for or because of any official act. We merely have to prove it's for or because of an official position. Essentially, as I understand what the government is doing here, is they are saying that there are two classes of potential defendants. And the matter of proof is different depending on whether or not you are within one class or the other.
Well, the hypothetical that might distinguish the situation is where someone who just likes to be around high-ranking government officials, if Sun Diamond gave the money to the Secretary of Energy, or gave the gifts, they had nothing in the world the Secretary of Energy could do to affect Sun Diamond. That would be because of official position, but not because of acts to be performed, don't you think?
Yes, I do, and I don't think we should presume that because they like to be around cabinet officers, that because it happens to be the Secretary of Agriculture, that it must have been for or because of an official act.
Well, but at least it was permissible. Would be permissible for the jury to find that in that.
Yes. Yes, and that's obviously our concern here. The jury did not get that question. And look, the jury can take a look at a lot of factors to determine whether or not it should make the inference that indeed the gift is for or because of an official act. The jury may take a look at the fact that the entity giving the gifts has matters pending.
Is one of those factors whether or not the receiving official could reasonably interpret or should reasonably interpret the action as being designed to reward a particular official act?
I think it could be a factor, yes. I mean, clearly, what I would think...
Would you instruct the jury to that effect in every case?
I tend to be partial to the plain vanilla circumstantial evidence that we get in all the jury instructions. What I do believe...
You keep saying specific act. You keep using that term, but the kind of hypotheticals you're accepting do not have specific act. Why isn't it enough that the person gave the money to obtain favorable action in the abstract? I give him money just because, you know, you have been a friend to AT&T over the years in your position as chairman. I'm not referring to any particular decisions, and if the government had to come up with a particular ones that it was given for, you couldn't identify any particular ones. But I think you'd be under the statute if you said, I'm just giving you this because you have been a good friend to our company over the years. Wouldn't that be a violation of the statute?
I don't believe so. Well, I don't believe so.
Well, it would be.
May I just one question for me? Would you tell me the difference between your position and the position of the Department of Justice in their separate brief?
Well, we certainly agree a lot with the Department of Justice in that it's generally a jury matter to determine the issue of intent. We probably disagree with the Solicitor General, I could think of, in three ways. First, the Solicitor General says that based on the regulatory relationship only, a jury should be able to infer guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. We agree that the substantiality of the gifts and the fact that there are matters pending are, in fact, factors for the jury to consider. And I think we can't decide in a vacuum whether or not that would be sufficient from which a reasonable jury can find beyond a reasonable doubt that gifts are given for because of an official act. Second.
Could you clarify that in terms of an instruction? Suppose the judge said, you may but are not required to infer from the fact that this corporation has matters or this entity has matters pending before the agency that this gift was given to influence official acts.
Would
that be a proper charge?
I would prefer a broader charge that instructs the
jury.
Well,
I didn't ask whether you preferred it. I asked if that would be a legally correct charge.
It may be. I frankly think it may be a bit prejudicial. The charge, if I may, that I would suggest to the jury is that the jury may consider the substantiality of the gifts, both to the donor and to the donee, the substantiality of the interest to the donor, the timing of the gifts vis-a-vis acts.
Would you finish your answer to my question, please?
Sure. The second place where we disagree with the Solicitor General is at one point it seems to us that he equates capacity to act with act. And I believe that capacity to act is an awful lot like position and suggests status. For example, I may want to hobnob with someone who has the capacity to act because it will enhance my prestige. The third place where we disagree is specifically on whether or not the statute requires a nexus to a particular act or just a general act. Aside from that, I think we'll
just describe. On that point, we don't have to agree with you on that position to affirm the judgment below, do we?
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
But let me get back to what you mean by the nexus to the particular act, and I guess I'm going back to Justice Ginsburg's hypothetical. If the judge charged the following, would it be legally sufficient? In order to show that the gift was given for or because of an official act, the government must prove that the gift was given with an intent to influence the performance of an official act. You need not necessarily, but you may find on this evidence that the gift was so given because at the time it was given, there were two matters pending before the secretary in which the donor, Sun Diamond, had an interest. One was the insecticide interest and the other was the grants to subsidiaries interest. Would that have been a legally sufficient instruction?
I suspect that the answer is yes, but to be candid, the converse of that question says, could I, as a defendant, prevail on a Rule 29 motion? And I will tell you that I, as a defense counsel, would make a very strong Rule 29 motion based on the facts in this case that no rational trier of fact could find Sun Diamond guilty on this record.
Why? Make your argument.
Certainly. There were two matters that the government proved were pending. One was the MPP, the grant program.
Yeah.
The evidence was that Sun Diamond wanted the secretary, this is the indictment, alleged that Sun Diamond wanted the secretary to adopt a definition of a small entity to cover its member cooperatives. Yet the evidence at trial was that Richard Douglas told the secretary this is probably something that is better left for Congress. That's one. There was no effort and there was no evidence to reflect an effort to influence the Secretary of Agriculture in any way to assist Sun Diamond. The second matter that was pending dealt with the issue of methyl bromide. Methyl bromide is a fumigant that the EPA was proposing to phase out. The history, I would argue, of the USDA was opposing the phase-out. Indeed, the evidence in the record demonstrates that the USDA was the largest user of methyl bromide.
So you're saying they were doing it anyway. That's your argument. Okay, I understand.
That is correct. What I was going to go back to is the issue of these two classes and the fact that because Sundiamond is a regulated entity, somehow we deserve a different standard. And I think effectively what that does is create an impermissible, irrebuttable presumption. That is, if the jury were to find, and if the jury did find, that Sundiamond gave gifts for or because of any official position, then the court, as a matter of law, was saying, then Sundiamond must have given it for or because of any official act. And under In re Winship, of course, it is the government's burden to prove each and every element of the offense beyond a reasonable doubt. I wanted to go back also to the issue of this hierarchy of conduct. Clearly, at the top of the hierarchy is bribery. Clearly, below that, we have the gratuity as a reward. In our view, at the bottom is for or because of an official position, which is governed, we believe, administratively. There is a question as to whether or not there is a gap between bribery and the gratuity. Clearly, bribery covers improper attempts to influence. Clearly, gratuity covers the issue of rewards. The difficult issue is whether or not there is a gap that is filled by the gratuity statute. And that's why I'm partial to the language of the Court of Appeals that says, essentially, we don't have to decide what the bribery statute line is. But wherever we draw that line, the gap will be filled by the gratuity statute. To conclude, we believe that the district court, by instructing the jury that the government did not have to prove that Sundiamond gave gifts for any act at all, stripped the jury of its fact-finding mission. It simply did not have an opportunity to decide the one question that was crucial to this case. That question was purposefully kept away from the jury because the government argued and the district court agreed that no connection needed to be shown. That relieved the government of its constitutional obligation to prove every element of the offense beyond a reasonable doubt. That was error, and for that reason, we therefore ask for this court to affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals.
Thank you, Mr. Bloom. The case is submitted.